You're always evolving. You're always learning more. And even when you think you got it, a new judgment comes down, or a reversal of a prior decision. And now you have to learn that too. So within the law field, continued legal education is a big thing that is emphasized. You can lose your license or be suspended if you're not keeping up to what the bar believes is the par, or understanding how the landscape of the law is changing.
Welcome back to the Injury Pros Podcast, where I am here again today with attorney Stephen DeBonis from Carrasco & Sale. And the topic today is going to be the disconnect on how the average person thinks about an attorney, right? So Stephen, what I want to discuss is, you know, as an attorney, me working in the legal field, we start to think of this specialization of attorneys as not really a unique thing, but the common person may not really understand how specialized an attorney can get.
Of course.
Right?
So most people, the law is a black box. And for them, you got a problem, you need a lawyer. And lawyer really isn't expanded on, and that's pretty much as far as it goes. But it's kind of like assuming every doctor can perform open heart surgery, right? So technically, they're all doctors, as we are all lawyers, but you wouldn't go to like a dermatologist to do a triple bypass and vice versa. So law is kind of the same. It's hyper-specialized and experience matters. So when you're kind of looking at it and you're saying, I need a lawyer, there's sub-questions that need to go into that. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today.
Right. So, you know, think about, we've seen between the two of us probably thousands of leads of people looking for attorneys, right? And there's also a different spectrum of like what people understand in this industry. But I would say the average person doesn't think of it like you would think of it, like a doctor in the industry, right? So since you're from a young age, you think of, oh, I go to a surgeon for this. I go to the dentist for my teeth. I go to, you know, I have a foot problem. I go to the podiatrist. I feel like in this industry, it's less clear cut because most people are going to go to a doctor from early on in their life and need them almost every year in some capacity, some type of doctor. Where a lawyer, you don't really, you're not looking for a lawyer until you really need one for a reason, right?
It's something that's just, it's out of sight, out of mind. It's not there until it's needed. And one of the comparisons I think we were talking off screen a little bit about is, it's almost like the Matrix, and or the Hangover, where they do like the slow-mo and all the algorithms start coming up and there's like subsections and sections and kind of how, in my mind, when a lead comes in, that's how the legal field is divided. You think of medicine, like you just mentioned, it's divided by body parts. So it's life parts. And the criminal law, there's personal law, there's maritime law, there's equestrian law. And each of them handle different things, like family law, divorce, custody, adoption, personal injury, car accident, slips and fall. And you have all those subsets that kind of, based on what the injury is or based on what the scenario is kind of how things start to get queued up. And then that's not even touching on corporate lawyers, intellectual property, immigration. And nowadays with ChatGPT and everything else popping off, you're going to have AI law soon. And each of them have their own rules. They have their own rhythms. They have their own landmines. And lawyers in each world speak different language. I personally, if I called up a military law attorney, they would say things to me that I wouldn't even understand. And I would think and feel many times as our clients do. It's this legal jargon that you're just taken back and you have to be like, well, what did you just say? What? Can you break it down and talk to me like I'm five? And that's one of the big things that you can really scare yourself with how much law is out there.
All right. So let's take some examples, right? So you have your field of practice, which is mainly personal injury. You may have a criminal lawyer, you may have a family lawyer, right? They're all attorneys, but they're all doing dramatically different things on an average day. So how would you say the average day of a personal injury attorney would be different than maybe a criminal or a family lawyer that's different, doing a different type of law?
So laying out those blueprints, and candidly, I'm able to speak a little bit about the criminal law side because I was a prosecutor in Philadelphia, a district attorney, and then a prosecutor in Middlesex for about 5 years total and handled an array of different cases from homicides to sex assaults. But notwithstanding, my day as a district attorney or prosecutor was much differently than now with personal injury. So if we're looking at, I'll take it from the defense side of criminal law, their day might start in jail because ultimately they're meeting with their client, they're going over discovery, and more times than not, that person may be detained. So they have to all that discovery there because they have an obligation to give them effective assistance of counsel. And that particular jail might be in Chester County. It might be in Bucks County. It might be even in Lehigh County and beyond. And after there, they may then jump after meeting with one client. They have to switch their whole mindset and go to a bail hearing and hope that their client, cross their fingers, is able to see the light of day and get out of jail or be released on bond, GPS monitoring or something of the sort. And it might end up with them going home, seeing their family, seeing their loved one, and a late night for a trial prep or a motion to suppress the next day. You flip that on its head, and personal injury lawyer, my day is totally different depending on what the flare is. Am I doing an intake? Do we just have a new client that wants to come in, see our office and meet me face-to-face, see Meatball, see our staff? Or am I going for a minor compromise? For those who may not know, that's just an approval of the court for a settlement for an individual younger than 18. If that's the case, I got to jump on Zoom and or go in person to any of the counties that we service in the Commonwealth. Notwithstanding that, I might just be doing a deposition or having prep or prepping a complaint. Different things where I'd say more times as a personal injury attorney, we are prepping and getting into the nitty gritty of statutes, insurance companies, who the appropriate parties are. And many of those times, thankfully, flexible, but also we're in the office because that's where a lot of our files are, our documents are, our team members are, and we're trying to prepare and move that case towards settlement or filing. And then last I'll touch on is an estate attorney. An estate attorney is dealing with drafting wills, advising clients on tax implications, walking them through, and they're also balancing very similar, I think, across each of those three scenarios, grieving family. A grieving family is on our practice of law too. We have individuals who have lost someone because of the negligence of others. Criminal defense side, maybe they're wrongfully being accused of this crime, but it still impacts them. If they're rightfully or wrongfully accused, these families are impacted on both the victim side as well as the defendant side as well. So a lot of those have a very similar but very different things. They have different stress, different pace, and ultimately at the end of the day, there's different muscle that's involved because you're doing different things and juggling many things at once.
So from your perspective, right, so you're going through law school, you have an idea of what you want to do, right? You're going into law school, I want to be a lawyer, right? That's what I want to do. How much understanding or perspective did you have on how different paths are when you're coming out of law school? How you can doing a completely different job depending on which perspective you take?
You are shell-shocked by the time you get out of law school on just how much, and it's no one's fault about preparing or not preparing, but the analogy I always like to make is when you went to high school, no one told you how to write on an envelope, how to mail something, or how to open up a bank account or checkings account, or even ultimately how to write a check. In each of those scenarios, you just hope that you have somebody in your life that's a good mentor or advocate that teaches you these things. In law school, you're kind of just thrown to the wolves and it's sink or swim. So you're exposed to the overall arching topic of criminal law, property law, civil procedure, which is more so kind of personal injury law, I would say aligns itself with that. And there's other different ones too, statute and regulations, and you can go on and on and on about the different subsections, but you're just learning about the law at a very overhead. You're not learning about the day-to-day grind. Your internships and externships will teach you that, but even so, you're still just getting a little bit of a larger topic where there's people still today that I talk with that are many years older to I, and even younger getting into the field, that are just shocked at how much they don't know or they feel like they're out of sync. But that's it. You're always evolving. You're always learning more. And even when you think you got it, a new judgment comes down or a reversal of a prior decision. And now you have to learn that too. So within the law field, continued legal education is a big thing that is emphasized. You can lose your license or be suspended if you're not keeping up to what the bar believes is the par or understanding how the landscape of the law is changing.
All right, so let's dial this back a little bit. Now, so what we figured out is you're starting somewhat general, you're going to law school, you're figuring out what you want to do, you're getting into your career, you're typically choosing a path, and then you're, in some sense, specializing. Right now, you and I both know some attorneys will specialize more than others. Some attorneys will operate more like a generalist, they'll do in multiple practices of law versus other attorneys that get really into a niche of doing one thing specifically. So what are some of the benefits of getting into specific elements of law versus maybe having more of a generalist career?
So as a generalist, there's pros and cons. If you go to a generalist, and we'll talk more about this throughout the episode, you have a potential of getting steamrolled. We as personal injury lawyers, we are familiar with workers' compensation. We are familiar with wills and trusts. We are familiar with probate laws. But if it came down to it and push came to shove, I would be able to talk intelligently to it. But exceptions and loopholes and benefits and tax benefits or tax consequences, I wouldn't know where to begin. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions for people who like to sit generally is you know a lot about nothing. You wear many hats, but there's not one that you wear and feel completely comfortable with. And different strokes for different folks. But in personal injury law, when there's so many implications for workers' comps and ultimately tax implications, you can't just sit idle for that general. But being specific, here at Cardisco Sale, we are personal injury attorneys. However, one of the specific things that the partners and lawyers alike, and even our team members are trained very well on, is traumatic brain injuries. This is still something very new and something that we can have an whole episode on. Mechanism of injury, the symptomology that's associated with it. This training doesn't happen overnight. You don't just wake up one day and like, all right, I'm going to specialize in TBIs, traumatic brain injuries. Traumatic brain injuries are something that you have to eat, sleep, and basically go through. Michael Sale, one of the founding partners, and myself go to San Diego, and it's a very involved traumatic brain injury. It's called Med Legal, and they teach you everything about concussions and traumatic brain injuries, how even at 5 miles an hour, you can suffer a mechanism of injury that can have drastic impacts to the rest of your life. And while that's something I can speak freely to and intelligently to and well, if we had a case where it was two jet skis or a boat or a yacht, that's maritime law. I would seek out, as a person who is in personal injury law and knows about it, that expertise and the word is law person that can tell me with absolute certainty that this is the way it is. There's no availability for gray area when somebody's potential recovery or injuries are at stake. And that's something that you really run into a trouble with is these people want to dabble. I think Tom Wing used it the other day in our episode, the dabblers. You can dabble all you want, but proceed with caution.
So getting back to a little bit of what you said here is, you know, and this is a good takeaway if you're listening to this and if you're looking for a lawyer or if you kind of came across this because you're trying to find the right attorney to help you with something, if you just go to Google, ChatGPT, wherever you're going to look for information, you just search, I need a lawyer, or a lawyer near me, or a lawyer that can help me. You're not doing yourself the right amount of justice when what you should be doing is looking more specific in your search, right? So personal, I need someone, an attorney that can help me with a knee injury I suffered after a car accident, I need an attorney that can help me to prepare a will because my family's growing. I want to make sure that I'm protected, right? That specific search, looking specifically for what you want, it's possible now with what these search engines can do, and it's going to really help you.
You kind of said it. You have to make that orphan, I'm an English major, from Drew University, shout out to Morristown. It's called an orphan quote. It's when you make kind of a statement and you don't really have any bark or bite or association with it. If you say, I need a lawyer, well, we just went over, there's about 7 to 10 specialties of lawyers and about 25 to 30 subspecialties. So Google's gonna do its thing, or ChatGPT is gonna do its thing and make many assumptions of what kind of attorneys you may need. And guess what? Many times, more times than not, the people that are going to be the creme de la creme on the top of that list, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Marketing, is the people who A, expend the most money, are close to your geographical timestamp and location, but also reviews. And they're just going to be pushed to the top based on just what Google's telling them or ChatGPT. When you add that extra flair, and it's more so of just being out of that black box, I need a lawyer because I'm hurt. I need a lawyer for tax purposes. You're going to get those buzzwords and associations. A personal injury lawyer may show up if you say, I need a lawyer, because it's a lawyer near me, and it might be happenstance that it works. Knowing and being an advocate and educating yourself too puts you in the right hands and begins that process. But we'll talk a little bit about more of the questions that you should be asking an attorney anyway that you might be contemplating to hire. because it's almost like a self-check and a self-evaluation checklist to get those red flags that we talk about on TikTok and YouTube to say, maybe I'm not in the right place. Maybe this is the person that isn't for me and this piece doesn't fit. Yeah, they're a good person, they're a good attorney, but they don't know my story. They don't know my issues and they're not able to adequately address. They might get the job done, but we'll talk about a horror story in a little bit about how just picking the right attorney can mean tens and thousands of dollars from a personal injury side. Let's not even talk about a tax side of the implications that the IRS might come knocking on your door.
Yeah, so let's, and we'll get into that horror story. So let's start it here. So we were talking about attorneys that do more general practice. So they're operating across a bunch of practice areas. And we're not saying this to hurt any feelings or to discredit anyone or criticize anyone, but I think you'd agree with me, a lot of times attorneys do that is because they're trying to broaden their business. So they have more opportunities to do more different types of cases, right? So if you're running a practice and you're trying to get more cases in the door, the more type of practice areas they do, the higher chance and rate that you're going to get the cases that you won. But the drawback, obviously, like you said, is sometimes there's horror stories because the attorneys are less well-rounded. They're stretching themselves more thin, do more types of law. And sometimes you're not getting the case result you would get with somebody that specializes and handles those type of cases day in and day out.
So yeah, I mentioned being steamrolled. It's almost like walking into a chess match when all you've played is checkers. So generalists might not be thinking about the niche rules that are involved in those things. Yeah, you're wearing the many hats, you might get the job done. But that horror story, I knew a guy that got rear-ended. Guy got rear-ended and he hired a general lawyer. Basically, that general lawyer was a personal injury lawyer, but he dabbled in many things. He did criminal law, he did some wills and estates, and whatever else that he was able to comfortably do. Ultimately, at the end of the day, that attorney missed a tight deadline. But not even the tight deadline point, he forgot to send out a spoliation letter that ultimately would have preserved the black box. So, little nutshell, when you're involved in a tractor-trailer crash or there is some type of, even regular vehicles have these now because of the advancements that we have, there's certain boxes, EDR or black box, that records the speed prior to a large impact. You might hear black box referred to in ultimately unfortunate tragedies with planes. They're also in tractor trailers and they're also in vehicles. But the insurance company is under no obligation, or the defendant or the tortfeasor, to just hold on to them and wait for you to come around knocking for them. You have to be proactive and you have to send out letters to preserve them. Well, this attorney didn't do that. Ultimately, the case was weakened because it was a he say, she say situation, and the case dropped by tens of thousands. Had they come to an attorney, personal attorney like Curtis Cohen Sale, or a person who was familiar with the process, that letter would have went out the same day that we signed them up, and we would have had that more of a chance to preserve that. And guess what? If they got the letter and they didn't preserve it, we get an adverse inference for saying, hey, they knew about this and they didn't save it. You can take what you want from that. And if we're in front of a jury, that speaks volumes to not only the way that business is run, but the culpability of them too.
All right. So Stephen, let's give people listening the tools to avoid that happening, right? So we already talked about, if you're going to do your own research on the internet, be specific to what you need. But the other part of it is when you think you found somebody that may be a good fit, or you're not really sure, what are a few questions that you should be asking that attorney? What do you want to know? What do you want to make sure you hit on to make sure that they fit into the mold of what you're going to need for your case type?
No two cases are alike. So the specific, even if you like this individual, you want to make sure that the communication is there and it's open, it's transparent, and you're not constantly following up and trying to get answers. Off the bat, how often do you handle cases like mine? You want to be able to speak with this attorney and they should be able to tell you intelligently, yes, this is a niche that we have. This is something that I'm specialized in. I go to X webinars or I go to X seminars in person. I have training. We try cases often. One of the biggest things I see is you have these factory mills, these big businesses and these big firms, everybody knows who they are, that are just rubber stamping and trying to settle cases as much and quickly as possible. That works for some people, but you need to have those expectations laid out before. How will you handle my case? Give me a blueprint on how it is handled. Can you walk me through your strategy in similar cases? An attorney should be able to intelligently talk to you if it's a brain case or involves a traumatic brain injury or neck whiplash. Hey, I'm going to get you to NeuroSync. They're going to give you a virtual test that tells you if there's any abnormalities in your eye gait or in your response time. Very similar with being under the influence of drugs or alcohol with an impairment. As they say, the eyes are the telescope into your head and into your mind, because it's showing what's going on with your brain, optic nerves, and everything else that's involved. An attorney should be able to tell you, hey, you're going to go to a neurosurgeon who specializes in your spinal cord, which includes obviously your brain as well, and we're going to get you some vestibular therapy, and we're going to talk about your symptoms. If they're telling you that they're going to send you to your PCP, or which is your primary care physician, or if they're just saying, just get some PT and some chiro manipulation, run away as fast as you can. Just run away, because none of that's helping your case. All that's doing is just going through your PIP, and ultimately it's just not getting you better. These individuals need to be able to tell you not only a game plan for your case, but how they're going to help you get better. I'm not a medical doctor, but I would never have thought in a million years that going to law school would be affiliated with a medical degree. But we are very much in the know. We need to know how the body works and how these injuries are. Do I need to get diagnostic testings? Because at the end of the day, guess what? The insurance company is going to point back at you and say, you went to see a chiropractic. And there's no shade on chiropractic treatment. I will say that. But if you have a herniation, I think chiropractors and every other people in the medical field can agree, you're going to want some sort of tangible, objective finding in an MRI or some other testing, an EMG showing that there's some radiculopathy to help you get better. And not to get too far off, but to reel it back in, they need to be able to speak the language to you like you're a five-year-old. The way that my father always used to say is, if you don't understand something and you think you understand it, explain it to me like I'm five. Explain it to me so it's so basic. I go home and I talk about PI work, and my wife is a prosecutor now, and her eyes just roll back in her head. And she's like, it's so boring. But I said, yeah, it's boring, but I want to be able to advocate for my clients. And I want to be able to make sure that if I'm explaining to you, you get it. And she's like, yeah, I get it. You're talking to me like I'm five. And I'm like, that's it. That's what I want. That's what I need to hear. And then we go on our way. Because at the end of the day, you have to be able to. People might say, yeah, I understand it. But unless you can really break it down to its fundamental, and your attorney who's representing you should be able to do that. And one of the biggest things, trust your gut. I can't say this enough. You have to trust your gut. If it sounds more like a salesperson than a surgeon, move on. Go on to the next person, because they're just there for a paycheck. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you have to obviously change your expectations to who you're going. If you're going to a dentist that got 2-star reviews and you're expecting your root canal to go swimmingly, it's probably not going to happen. There's a reason why. There's an affiliation with reviews, and there's an affiliation with reputation in the community. And you got to have to advocate for yourself and do the research. Don't just sign up for the quick thing. And I think one of the things we're going to talk about is, if the sentence starts with a friend of a friend is a lawyer, stop. Stop right there and just don't go that way. Unless there's somebody you really know and you're running through the gauntlet and they get it and they understand and you're comfortable. I can't tell you how many cases we get referred to us because it started with a friend of a friend was handling, and then they call us up and say, it's a torts claim notice. I didn't send out a paper in time. Or, hey, you know any doctors that handle XYZ or letters of protection and any other bajillion words that I can throw out? If it starts with a friend of a friend, it's probably going to end in tears. And I hate to say it, but I've seen it play out too many times.
So I think we could do a full episode on referral red flags probably, right? But let's get into referrals, because this is the big part of this, right? Friend, or what we'll talk probably most about, is one attorney that does one type of law referring to another attorney that specializes more in that type of law. And in this industry, depending on the state you're in, and there's different regulations, a lot of times it's a business decision, right? Because referrals will pay back referral fees between attorneys. That happens. That is real. That exists. Most people may not know that. So a lot of times when you're being referred, you would hope you're being referred to the right person for your case based on that relationship. But sometimes those referral decisions are made based on it being a business decision. So that's something people need to be aware of as they're thinking about referrals. So let's just talk about the referral system, how it works, what people should look out for and be aware of.
Sure. So generally speaking, friendships are great. And I have some great friends that I still talk to from high school and college, and many of them are in my wedding. But legal needs aren't actually favors. A good lawyer will never be offended by that. That it would actually take that as a compliment, because you're asking the right questions and they'll probably find someone who's better suited for you. So notwithstanding, the way the referral is I like to touch base with as many people as I can, because I've always been a proponent, knowledge is power. I might not know the answer to something. I want to make a contact on LinkedIn, in person, dinner, happy hour, whatever it may be, because those individuals I'm going to go to in my time of need. And many times those individuals are in estates and trust. I would need that if it's a wrongful death. Family law, if it's something that involves a renunciation of that and an estate needs to be raised, I want to have these contacts, because as we touched earlier on today, I don't have the answer to everything. If it's in personal injury, sometimes I still don't have the answer to everything. And I think one of the most humbling things that you can do is accept that you don't have the answer. And that's how referral, I can't tell you how many times I have good friends that are still on my phone now. It started with a, hey, I think there's a TikToker now. Hey, I got a question. And I start that question and it begins to say, oh, well, I have a client who needs a personal injury attorney. Okay, well, we've already established a rapport with each other. And I think the most green flag worthy is your vulnerability to know that you're not the person to say all, end all. And if you need help, to reach out. And I think people who are good in the law field and this particular practice generally see that. When a person comes to them and is vulnerable to them and say, hey, I don't really have the answer to this, but I care enough about my client, I care enough about this referral, I care enough about my family member, friend, whoever it may be, to ask you and to basically swallow my pride, there's something that is just clicks, and it's something that's really magical, and it just happens because they get it. They're like, oh, this person gives a hoot. I'm going to send people to them because I know they're not just going to write them off or say, I don't really have this, I don't really know what it is. We had an individual came in a referral the other day. We weren't able to help the person. It was equestrian law. Person was injured while they were on a bucking carriage and in a particular landowner's house. I went over all the information. I did my research. I don't know everything equestrian. I reached out to referrals. Lo and behold, that person from the equestrian that I reached out to, that is the attorney, just sent us three cases. It's just how it works, because he respected the grind. He respected the work. And that's all you can care about. You don't want someone who's like, thanks for the referral, but I can't handle it. Well, give me a reason why. Explain to me why. And that's where the friendships. It's not that forced. If the piece doesn't fit, you don't try to force it. What you try to do is you try to find out why it doesn't fit, and you move on to the next and have that conversation and have those relationships and rapport build.
And referrals are important because, you know, the average law firm, about 30% of the cases that come into their firm are going to come from some element of referral, whether it's a past client or it is another attorney. So just something to be aware of if you are looking for a lawyer. Referrals are a great source. It's good to ask around, but just remember to do your research on both sides. Yep. So accept the referral, reach out to the attorney, but then do some of your own independent research on that attorney, right? Don't just always trust every lawyer referral you get, because some are business decisions, and that's how it's driven. But, you know, we'd hope, and we believe here, and we believe most attorneys are going to try to put you in front of the right attorney that's going to fit your case and help you the best.
And even if we can't, and I think this is one of the big things that our intake team is so good at, Barb especially, is if it's a criminal matter, we're not dabbling in generalists. We have a very long list of specific people that we trust, not because they're sending us referrals, but more so because we know they're going to take care of our client and that they're also going to do their damn well good job, because the reviews and the feedback we get. There's people that we've had on the list before that maybe they just fall out of favor and they're not being responsive. We don't continue to send people. We don't go back. You go back to the drawing board and we reassess, because that's what's important. You're not just referring out a case to refer out a case. You're taking a little bit of yourself with that and you're referring it. So we get that. When you refer us a case, or we have to refer out a case for a criminal, we're not just kicking the can down the hallway. We're walking and holding the hand and making sure it's transitioned. We're following up. And the same thing goes for cases that are sent to us. I can't tell you, I'm actually dropping off a check today for a referral, because I want it to get to that person. I want to look them in the eye. I want to thank them. And I want to say, hey, it's a big decision to send a case to somebody. And especially when we can get policy limits, I want to look you shaking the eye and say, look, we did well by you. You did well by us. This is a rapport. This is a friendship that's building. We appreciate you. And people care about that. A handwritten note goes a long way. And I'm excited because I'm bringing Meatball with me too. So hopefully he doesn't get in any trouble while we're there. But it's just one of those things that's kind of cool. It's like, hey, you took a little bit of yourself and you handed it to me. I took it and we made it a case and we were able to facilitate treatment and ultimately get a policy decision. And now you get a little bit of that piece back. It's kind of like that book, The Missing Piece, where he's going around trying to find the piece that's missing. And we're able to facilitate kind of putting that all back together to make a nice little shape.
Yeah, one of the great things about this show, and as we're talking about this, is that, you know, and injury pros, we're allowed to bring on attorneys that do different types of law than we do, right? So we're the injury pros, but we'll speak with, we've had workers' compensation attorneys on the show, we'll family law attorneys, we've had personal injury attorneys from other states where their things are a little bit different in how they do things, right? So, you know, we bring on a lot of the people that we work with on referral relationships all the time. And, you know, they're great resources for us, and we're happy to have those people on. You know, Stephen, I just want to finish things out. You know, going back to the beginning here is, at some point in a lot of people's lives, they get to this point where they're like, I need a lawyer for whatever reason. It's whether they're hurt or they have a legal issue or an employment issue or something that's going on in their life. They know they need a lawyer, but they don't really necessarily know much else. You know, what is that one thing that they should know or that they should think about when that question arises?
Don't just look for a lawyer. Look for the right lawyer. And what I mean by that is the one who will live and breathe your case, because specialization, it's not a luxury, it's protection. Like I mentioned earlier with the horror story, because when it comes to the law, experience isn't just power, it's peace of mind. It's not living in purgatory, it's knowing that your case is being handled with that TLC and knowing that you can focus on your treatment and getting better rather than wondering if the person you hired is doing what they're supposed to be doing. So it's one of the biggest things at the end of the day is don't rush the process. Trust the process. I think Ari Sliffman, these are throwbacks in podcasts now, said it during our mediation talk. Trust the process. Trust the process that you're doing right and you're facilitating each of the questions and asking the right questions to get the right attorney. And I think that's pretty much the important part about it at the end of the day.
You heard it right here from Stephen. Stephen, thanks for coming on again. I think you and I are going to go get another cup of coffee. We're going to wrap up here. I just want to thank everyone again for joining us on the Injury Pros podcast. Make sure you go to injurypros.com. You can watch more episodes there, listen on your favorite podcast network, check out some of our other resources there. Thanks again for listening and stay safe.
I will say, as a parting gift, for those who don't watch live on the video, both Alex and myself today did a clean shave. And those listeners who listen on the podcast, Spotify on the go, don't get to see that. So hop over to YouTube, add, follow, and like, and you see us in the flesh and not just a voice.
Yeah, we're not handsome, but we're clean shaven.
Fair enough.
There's your takeaway message. All right, thanks.